Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you, the podcast where fascinating people meet. That's why it's a salon. And I am your host, your groove mistress, and your spiritual advisor, Madam Perry. But you don't have to call me Madam. You can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP, Perry. I'm just delighted to be here, and I'm delighted that you are, too. Thanks to everyone who's been following and has been subscribing on Apple or Spotify. Thank you so much. I appreciate the subscription. I especially appreciate some of the reviews that I get. Well, all of the reviews, actually. Thank you again so much. Because of you doing that, I get to continue having some of the, such fantastic guests like I've got coming up. Last week, we had Matthew Klickstein. If you missed that at all, please go back and check it. And turns out we had a mutual friend, Beth Lapidus, the writer and comedian and producer of Uncabaret, that we talked about too. And let's see, we've got filmmakers coming up. Hopefully Charles Mason, who is a costume maker and sci-fi author that I met this year at Wild Wild West Con. Hopefully Charles is going to settle down on a date and he'll be here too soon. But anyway, tonight's the night. We have got such a good time coming in. Now, my guest is almost here. In fact, actually, she's going to have to beam in because that's what she's used to. That's why. Because that's just the way it is. So let's see if I can, if we see her out there, let me check with Fiona the Wonder Dog. Fiona, look out the window. Tell me what we see.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, Intruder Alert. HQ 3, Intruder Alert.
Whoa, as I sit here in the genie bottle, who just beamed in?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that was quite an experience here. Wow. I brought my beautiful black long-furred kitty, Michonne, named after the wonderful black character on Walking Dead. She wouldn't shut up, so I had to bring her tonight. Sorry.
I am thrilled to have Michonne here with you. Lynn Barker. How? Oh, this is the only way that you could enter. You just had to make your entrance like the star, like the celebrity, that the fabulous woman that you are. And you have brought us so much with Twilight Zone, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and that's just a teeny, teeny, teeny bit of your creativity, your brilliance, and your talent that you've given to us to make our world so much better. So welcome to Madam Perry Salon for your first visit to you and to Michonne.
Oh, well, this is a lovely place. I love the cushy cushions. And, oh, my God, Michonne, she's kneading one of your pillows with fringe on it, and she's going to wreck it. I'm sorry.
It's going to be fun.
Hey,
this
girl,
is a place to happy.
Oh, she's lying down. She'll leave us alone now.
Okay. Well, I think Michonne is aware that Madam Perry is a groove and let groove kind of gal. So,
good.
Michonne, just call me JP, Michonne, and we are just fine. And, yes, she is gorgeous, like the gorgeous Michonne in Walking Dead. So happy to have you both here. Lynn, I don't know where to begin. You have got so much cred in show business, in writing, screenwriting, script doctoring. Where do we I don't hardly know, journalism, I hardly know where to start, but we're going to dive
in. I have reinvented myself several times by necessity. I think a lot of people out there can relate to that. Something dries up and you say, well, what else can I do? And I've always written something since I was very young. So from journalism to, you know, scripts and now novels. So we're moving right along.
Okay. Yeah, so, and one of the things some people will know or they'll ask me about right away is they say that you are such good and close friends with the writer Dorothy or D.C. Fontana, and you had such a friendship and you worked together for a decade, and we're very, very close. And one thing we've got to talk about tonight, we might as well jump in, is a project that I believe you and DC and another friend of yours, Bud Lewis, started that you had to finish after DC had to beam somewhere else.
She's out there in
Future.
The stars. We're positive. So.
I believe it, too. That's why I didn't say, you know, die or pass. I thought, well, she had to beam somewhere else. I have just finished reading Futurist Rex, the book that I believe, if I understand right, it was the idea came to you from Bud Lewis, to you in D.C., and you began writing it together. And why don't you tell more?
Well, I'll tell you. Well, first, I better tell you how I met Dorothy. People probably wonder, you know, how you get close to an icon. And I had been in television news in San Francisco, and I decided that the hard news thing wasn't for me after college. And so I, because I had a friend who helped me get into a few sets in down in L.A., and, of course, I was hooked. I thought, I want to write or produce this, you know. So I moved down there, and I had recently from then in college found out that D.C. Fontana was a woman because of the book, you know, The Making of Star Trek and a picture of her. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to take a shot in the dark and I'm going to write this woman a letter. So I put it on KRON TV stationery, which was where I worked in San Francisco, and I thought, I'm never going to hear anything. But I mailed it to her, and a week later the phone rings and it's her. And I had been asking for tips on how to get into the television industry. I didn't say definitely writing things, but, you know, producing or, you know, or writing television. Mm-hmm. Did she have any tips? So in the phone call, she said immediately, I've got some tips for you. And can you meet me at Lucy's El Adobe across from Paramount for dinner, and I'll tell you what I can to help you. And after I didn't pass out, and I, yeah, sure. and she said, I don't look like all my pictures, so I'm going to be wearing a name tag, Petty Point name tag with a flying horse on it. I thought, I didn't know anything about science fiction fandom and that people wore name tags, so I thought, okay, all right. So here comes this woman, and darker hair than her picture, and with this name tag, so that had to be her. And long story short, we really hit it off, and that was the beginning of, like, an over 40-year friendship.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, but Futurus, yeah, many years. In the 80s, a very good graphic novel illustrator and author, Bud Lewis, with two D's, you know, brought this idea for King Arthur returning in the future. As legend has it, he was only sleeping and would return when Britain needed him the most. And this was Bud's idea, and at first he wanted to do it as a graphic novel, but he came to us and said, I think we could do it as a script. So we looked at it. Dorothy was always a huge Arthurian. She loved anything about the Arthur legends and, you know, everything from the love triangle to the sword and the stone and, you know, and any legends about Arthur returning. So she talked me into it, and I got into it, and we wrote a script that was, frankly, before its time because everybody who read it seemed to like it, but they went, we can't do the effects on this. This was like, I think, maybe the early 80s, and things were not developed. You could not do a character, you know, it would have had to have been a guy in a suit or animate, you know, several of our characters, and that was not what we wanted. And they didn't want that either. So it basically it got shelved because it was before its time. So Dorothy and I and Bud just went on about our business, different things. And then Bud, sadly, in 2014, died.
Oh.
And we didn't know where he was. We'd lost contact with him. And, you know, after that, we thought, oh, we should make this story, even for him, we should bring this story to life. So why don't we just write it as a novel? So we started and stops and starts because she was teaching at the American Film Institute, and, her students took up a lot of her time. And I'd write a section, and she'd write a section from an outline we wrote, and then we'd edit each other and, you know, take it back and forth. And the ball was in her court for a final section, and she started getting ill and got more ill and never finished it. So as soon as she passed, I vowed to finish the novel, and I did.
Mm. So I guess, you know, I try to imagine people writing something together, but you two have known each other for so long and been such good friends and worked together. Did that make it any easier or
It
more difficult?
You didn't have that thing of, you know, kind of being assigned a partner. I mean, where you have to tippy toe. If something sucked, we'd tell each other. You know, we'd say, this makes no sense. I think maybe, yeah. And, you know, we'd write each other back and forth more than we spoke on the phone. We'd write emails. And, what if this? And a lot of what ifs. What if we did it this? What if this happened instead? Or this person does this instead? And so we never fought over it at all. I mean, we'd figure out what was the best version and go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that way we shared different sections. And based on an outline, we did write sort of an outline that wasn't exactly like the script at all. Not completely. We had other characters and a few more things happening. But it is a very fast read. It's a short book. It's an action adventure set in future Britain, far future, after a Holocaust has happened. And it's taken people back to a bit of a medieval existence again, and they're at the mercy of techno wizards. And as Arthur C. Clarke said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And you have to keep that in mind when you think of these techno wizards. But anyway, there's a baddie. They've got a, you know, the people need a battle leader. And there's a strong troubadour. We call her a song sayer. And she could lead the rebellion, but she needs a battle leader. And, of course, guess who's going to wake up and be the battle leader?
King Arthur.
Yeah, King Arthur. So it's not an Arthurian tome with opinions about whether Arthur existed or not or what he's thinking about being a stranger in a strange land. There's a little of that. But it's a fast-moving, fun, and sometimes funny, and a romantic, there's a love triangle, action-adventure. And you can read it on a plane, I guess. You know, it's about 184 pages, depending on where you read it. If you read it as an e-book, or a paperback, or we have an audiobook, very good audiobook out, too.
Oh, good. Now, we talked about the Arthurian legend and so Arthur has been sleeping or suspended and something like that, and comes to, when he needs to. Oh, but before that, I wanted to ask, songsayer. In the book, Aliena is a songsayer. And now that's a word I've never heard. Did you create that for the book, or is that already?
Well, who knows? I mean, I haven't read everything in fantasy, so probably somebody has called some troubadour that. But yes, we thought we made that up, but I'm not going to say definitely he's ever called. Yeah, it's sort of like, she's keeping the legends of the past alive in her songs. And the pre-giant, really awful war legends alive in her songs. And so it's just another way to say troubadour.
Right. Yeah. So I was thinking when they first said it, you know, bring out the song sayer and then the type of song she began to sing, you know, of course it all made sense to me. And it made me think of things like I once had an acting teacher that said, artists are the priest of our culture. And I thought, well, then that's what she is. You know, she's holding the information and the stories and keeping it for the culture to share.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And by the way, you're one of the few people that pronounces her name correctly off the bat. I've gotten Alena, Alana. It is Aliena. You're right. So congratulations.
Good.
Being one of the few people to get. But what I enjoy, too, is we've got this whole Robin Hood-esque band of former robbers who, rob from the rich and they keep it. They are the poor, so, they rob from the rich and keep it, but they're good-hearted people. And Connery Beige is the head of this group of foresters, and he has been forced to go straight or lawful by the grand magician, Corian, who has made him a marshal of one of her outposts. So he's got to wear a uniform, and he hates it. And he's kind of trapped because her punishments are legendarily horrible. So he has to kind of do what she says. And he's not comfortable in that uniform and pulls at the collar a lot. And he can't wait to get back to his old ways and get his band of thieves back together again. But it's easier said than done. And he, of course, is the bad boy that Aliena is interested in until Arthur comes along.
Well,
and then
yeah.
you've got a little triangle there going, and it's interesting. And then we have two gals, two ladies who come together. They don't know each other until the rebellion led by Arthur and Aliena begins. And they come from two totally different backgrounds. And they meet, and they kind of like each other, or maybe they really like each other. So they're just discovering some of these things. And there's more to read in the sequel I'm writing on that one.
Oh, good, good. And I like that part, too. I like the fact that it just kind of fell in organically.
Yes, I tried to do it organically.
Yeah.
That's kind of mine. I sort of did that. But it's just all kinds. Everybody's represented in this book. You've got, I left it open except for one character is described as chocolate skinned. I kept it open so if you picture yourself in there, that's great. It could be anybody and any persuasion, any lifestyle, anything. They're described, but they're not described in such detail that you can't picture yourself as one of them.
Okay. All right. I get it. I like that. Yeah. Sweet. And of course, when Arthur is there, even though I read a lot of the Arthurian legends growing up, still I can't help but think about the first time I saw Camelot and Richard Harris was Arthur.
Oh yeah. Yeah, our Arthur is pretty robust. He's in his 40s,
yeah.
So he's still, rather robust. And yeah, you can picture that. I mean, a lot of people will, or they'll go to the movie Excalibur and picture that Arthur, or just whatever's in their brain. I didn't even mention Modred. There are also obviously two spellings. People say Mordred, or we went with Modred, just M-O-D, and there's many different legends with different spellings of his name. But of all the knights that were supposed to be sleeping with Arthur, the only one that wakes up with him due to certain circumstances is Modred. So he's got his nemesis, his nephew nemesis, to deal with in this, too. So you have your bad guys that are in this new, advanced, far future world, and then you got Modred. So does Arthur try to redeem him? Does he try to fold him into the rebellion in a good way, or will Modred go and be Modred, or will he maybe change
exactly.
The tune? We'll have to read it and find out.
Because I'm here to tell you, folks, you don't know at first. You keep thinking it's going this way, that way, and it kind of keeps you hanging on.
Well, some people love that because it is a fast read, and some people say, well, I wanted to spend more time with this bunch, and then you went over to this other bunch, and it's a big rebellion. We're trying to bring people together here, and so you have to sort of, concentrate on this bunch of people and then bring them together. So in the sequel, I'm going to do a lot more on each bunch, and we're going inside the enchantment. We haven't mentioned the enchantment, which is like the land of the fae.
Oh, yeah.
It's the equivalent of that. So you got your trolls, and you got your fairies, and you got all those type people. And we also have a race of beings called Fweens, T-H-W-E-E-N-S. And they are very dragon-like, but they hate being called dragons. They are feathered rather than scaled. They have many tiny wings, and they should not be able to fly, but bumblebees can fly, and they shouldn't be able to fly either. So you've got this thing that can fly that hates to be called a dragon, looks like one otherwise, and it can talk, is very intelligent, and pals around with, elvish gentry and other, beings from the enchantment, and they will maybe help out our good guys. So you have a really cool little being, and you mentioned you liked it so much you wanted a plushie, or a little plush doll of it.
I do.
His name's Yaustis, I'm sorry. Y-A-U-S-T-I-S, yes, okay.
Yaustis the Thween. I want a plushie of Yaustis. I do. And I don't know.
No, I think plushie means something else. I think that's people that enjoy being in costumes of, let's not go there. It's a plush.
Oh, no. I think I was thinking then maybe I was confused. I think like a stuffed, like what we used to call
stuffed toys.
Toy.
I get it. I do too.
Yeah.
I can't afford to have a bunch of them made, but it would be fun if somebody wanted to read the book and make one.
So many creative people are meeting at the cons, listening to the show, different authors. I know there's got to be at least 5 dozen that can make a
back in the day when I used to first start going to conventions, there were several people who made dragons, very cute plush dragons. I think I still have one somewhere. I'm sure these people have either passed on or stopped making dragons by now, but I know it's possible. But they would have to put something on it that looks like feathers, because this is not a scaled, it's a feathered dragon. Go there. But anyway.
Okay. I'll be putting the call out. You know I will.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Very good.
So, yeah, Yaustis is a Thween, and he doesn't want to be called a dragon. He doesn't want to be called a monster either.
Oh, gosh, no, none of them do.
No.
I think we have a 10-year-old boy, I haven't mentioned him, who first discovers that these beings have crossed over through a portal into the future world. And he sees them first, and he thinks, takes one look at Yaustis, and he thinks of monsters. So although we have Tiberius, who's a small creature, maybe an elf, but we're not sure. But anyway, a small little creature, and then we have a very tall, elegant member of the gentry who is very different. They all look very different, but they don't look like anything he's ever seen. So he calls them monsters first. And they don't like that at all. Of course. We have Merlin in the mix. I'm not going to tell you how he comes into the book, but we do have Merlin in the mix. And, he and Catch, who's the name of the 10-year-old boy, will become good buddies. So we'll see. But, lots of characters. People go, there's so many characters. I want more. Okay, I'm trying to write it.
All right. She's writing as fast as she can, folks. I love the quick, because you're right. They're having to, I can see your point now. They had to pull together this band, and they had to do it quick. They were going to be on them. They didn't have time to, linger over the fire and tell stories about how they became who they are. This is what they got to grab it and go.
Well, we do a little, but not pages and pages. The thing with, I haven't said what the bad person wants. I mean, I can't explain this either. What can I say? Power, the Grand Magician has power left over from pre-war eras in her stronghold. There are some powers that a lot of the populace think of as magic, and they are just technology that is not, familiar to them. So she has heard of a great power inside the enchantment, and she wants it. And the enchantment is behind invisible portals that are locked. And our land of the Fae people have stayed in there for a long time because what the humans have done to the outside sucks. So they do not want these humans in their land, and they don't come out anymore, although there was a time when they mixed together, the peoples, the different beings. But they're hiding in there, and they don't want humans in there, and they don't come out, usually. But somebody has been trying to pick their locks, and so that's why the beings, the three beings from the enchantment, go into the world of Aliena and soon Arthur, is to find out who's been picking their locks and what do they want. And so it's another power struggle in a lot of ways, and it will escalate into a hell of a battle.
Now, just tell people, if you're listening tonight, this is May the 30th, 2023, 8:25 p.m. GMT minus, I think GMT minus 4, Eastern, 8 p.m., 8:30, Pacific, 5:23, and you want to talk to Lynn Barker. You want to ask her a question about things she's written or about writing in general or about TVs, whatever, the number to call, 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free call in the continental U.S. And, yeah, please do. Or if people who don't have a phone or they're at a job where you can't make a phone call, I've been there, Lynn. You know, you got to make a call, but you got to be secret. You got to be under the desk. Just message me on Facebook, either through Madame Perry Salon or Jennifer Maudette Perry, and I will share that with her. Okay. I don't think I was really even aware while I was reading that there's going to be a sequel to Futurist Rex.
Well, yeah, that's something I didn't do right, because I thought I could tell the story in by finishing what we had an outline on, and I realized after it I've got not just questions, but people saying, I want more. I want more. Well, I want to go in the enchantment. I want to know, is Arthur going to end up with Aliena permanently, or is he going to end up, is she going to end up with Beige? What's going to, you know, what's going on? I want, you know. So I realized, oh, dear, I'm going to have to write. Dorothy and I had made notes in case the film, when we had written this original script, in case the film was popular, or it ended up being a TV series, who knew, was popular, we wrote notes for two sequels. And what I have done is expand those notes into one. I don't think I can do three books. I have other books I want to write, but I'm going to do two. I'm going to wrap up things that people ask questions about and try to expand on things people really like and just, you know, make everybody happier and tell more about these characters in this far future land. So that's where that came from. I didn't originally plan it to have a sequel. That's why it doesn't say first in the Chronicles of Arthur, you know, it's not, that's why that's not on the book cover.
I think we have a call coming in from somewhere in Chicago, right here through the genie bottle, and I know it's for you, Lynn.
Oh dear.
Welcome to Madame Perry. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. Come on in. Say hello to
Lynn
Barker.
Thank you for welcoming me in.
Well, hello, whoever you are. What's your name?
My name is Peter G. I'm an animator who lives in the Chicago area.
Cool.
And I've been listening into the show. I got a weird question for you. So I was looking over your IMDb, and it's like you're all over with science fiction. I mean, you had Space Academy and Jason Star Command, which I watched when I was a kid, DS9. And are there any sci-fi shows? Because sci-fi is kind of undergoing a renaissance. And it's kind of getting, I mean, we had the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, which was brilliant. The third season of The Orville. Are there any shows out there? Pardon me?
I did like The Orville, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Are there any shows out there that you look and you go, God, I wish their line producer would call me and say, hey, can you give me a script?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, but I kind of don't do that anymore. You know, I don't even have a agent in Hollywood anymore because I've kind of gone into this novel mode. But, I like Strange New Worlds. That Star Trek I like. I like From, which is by the original showrunners of Lost. And FROM, it's quite good. It's spooky as hell. I loved Walking Dead. And I know Greg Nicotero, but I didn't know, he doesn't know I write, you know, could still write things, I think. So I don't bother these people. But there are shows that, yeah, there's others my brain isn't clicking on. If you mention some, I could probably tell you whether I'd love to write that or not.
I mean, that's what I said about how sci-fi, it was undergoing a renaissance, and now it seems like they're trying to close it off a little bit. Because it seems like a lot of the good shows, I mean, I'm still upset we're not getting a season 4 of The Orville. I am still mad about
me
that.
Too. And I've written them about that. Because there was a lot of really good humor in it. And yet there was some very good, you know, a lot of pathos and soul-searching episodes as well. It had a nice combination. I thought it had a good combination of humor and some serious crap going on, you know.
I love Topa's story. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, very good. And everybody in it was quite good. And I really just, you know, there's so many shows that I wish could just keep going on that don't. In fact, there's something I was going to tell our hostess, Jen, that I should have a whole lot more credits because I wrote a whole lot more sci-fi and other shows, but either the showrunner that bought my script got canned and they threw every script the person bought out before it was shot, or the series was canceled before mine was shot. So I would have written the last season of the old Hawaii Five-0 with Jack Lord. I would have written, what else? A lot of other things. My mind isn't even, you know, registering anything right now. But I would have written a whole lot of more, and I would have had more credits. But they didn't. The Writers Guild does not count credits if they're not produced. So,
right.
Yeah. So I have a whole long list of stuff. I just had a lot of bad luck. I wrote two episodes of Amazing Stories that never got on because of that. But that was cancellation. That wasn't because of the showrunner got canned.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes on.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how things can change. I mean, I think it was called Princess Guinevere and the Jewel Riders. That was originally supposed to be an all-ages version of the Dragons of Pern books.
For so many years they said, we could never do those books. And, of course, you can do them easily now with CGI. Yeah, so for years people went, I wish we could do justice to those dragons. Well, now you can. Yep,
well, for me it was always amusing that it's like, we're going to do all-ages Dragons of Pern. It's like, okay, that's forget it. Let's just do this toy tie-in.
I've done everything in the business, I guess. I was a minor network executive at CBS, and some of these people have no imaginations. They really don't. Some of them do. Some of the executives at networks actually have imaginations, which is great. But there are a great deal of them who really don't get it when you pitch. That's why Gene Roddenberry had to pitch Trek as Wagon Train to the Stars, because they got then was Westerns, because that was what was ruling the airways at that time. Dorothy wrote a lot of those. D.C. Fontana wrote a whole lot of Westerns as well. But he had to pitch it, okay, you don't get it. It's a bunch of people going, you don't get it. Okay, it's Wagon Train to the Stars. Okay. We'll buy that.
One of my favorite stories was Mel Brooks when he was getting notes about Get Smart, and there was an episode where he sent the script to the network, and the note he got back from the network was, can you make the rabbi less Jewish?
No.
God. Well, no, I can't even go over some of the notes I've gotten. They're hilarious. The other show that I pitched to that got canned, or I forget what happened, was Quantum Leap, the first Quantum Leap, not the new one. I mean, there's more, and I could give you a list once they occur to me, but I should have like 10 more credits that I can't have because the show was never shot.
I'm a big fan of Ralph Bakshi, and they were talking with Tom Minton, who was one of his people they worked with on Mighty Mouse. And then at one point came.
I loved Mighty Mouse when I was a little kid. A young kid. Yeah, I loved Mighty Mouse.
Everybody
oh, yeah,
did.
And
here, what is it? Here we come to save the day.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. Mighty Mouse. Okay, I won't sing. I do sing and play guitar, but I'm not going to sing the Mighty Mouse.
But she is
okay.
A singer, yeah, and a musician, so, but okay.
You need some pipes to sing that, yeah. But Min had come up to him one time. Had come up to him one time and said, you know, every other show I've worked on has gotten notes from the network. I haven't gotten any notes. And Ralph told him, you got notes. You never saw them. I burned them all. And Minton looked at the camera and said, he probably wasn't kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that can get your show canceled if you don't, you know, at least pretend you're doing what they ask. You can think of another way to do it, you know.
Well, then
can get your show canned if you ignore them too much. So.
Well,
okay.
The story of Ralph and the standards. He was in his office one day and he gets a call from standards and practices. Say, well, we want to change this and edit that and slow this down and cut this out. And for a while, Ralph, wait a minute, let me get this straight. I don't legally have to do anything you say. Well, yeah, technically that's true. And he hung up the phone and never talked to him again.
Okay. All right. Hey, that's a good stuff. So hold with me just one second, folks. I've got a message I need to give for the International Steampunk Symposium from my friend Captain Medea Ashera. And we'll be right back with more Lynn Barker. Stay with us. Okay. It was here.
Salutations! Captain Medea Ashera here, cordially inviting you to attend the International Steampunk Symposium Circus-themed event, Steampunk Under the Big Top, happening from June 16th through the 18th at the Holiday Inn Eastgate in Cincinnati, Ohio. We have Freak Show Deluxe coming, and our afternoon fairway will have games, curiosities, balloon artists, prizes, and so much more. Madam Askew and the Grand Arbiter are coming from out west, bringing with them compliment dueling, which is only one of the Steampunk Olympiad games that will be going on throughout the weekend. You can come dressed up or casual, but should you want to get kitted out, we have over 40 amazing vendors on site. With the popularity of our afternoon tea in past years, this year we'll be offering two high tea events on Saturday. After our fashion show Saturday evening, our gothic masquerade starts out with dance lessons, and we have not one, but two amazing DJs on stage. To make things even more exciting, with it being Father's Day weekend, children under 18 will be admitted for free on Sunday with the purchase of an adult ticket. Head on over to steampunksymposium.com to get your tea and convention tickets, book a room, and find out more information about our event. And don't forget, life is a circus. Enjoy the show.
All right. Thanks so much, Captain Medea Ashera. And that's coming up very soon, the International Steampunk Symposium. So we are back here with Lynn Barker. And, of course, Madame Perry Salon's favorite Polish animator, Peter G., has called in.
I'm still here.
Okay, all right. So, Lynn, have you ever written for steampunk?
Have I ever? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Have you ever written any scripts that involve steampunk?
No,
folks?
But I have been to conventions where some beautiful costumes were, you know, a lot of steampunk kids I've talked to and young people I've talked to. And I love the look of that. Mm. But no, I don't think that was even big when I was, you know, in the apex of my career as a television writer. I don't think it was even big then, so it's bigger now.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, you've gotten so many articles, too, as a journalist and different things. I see American Cinephotographer, the Writers Guild magazine written by, and you even have a story in Chicken Soup and the Chicken Soup for the Soul of America.
Yeah, that one was written right after 9/11, and a friend and I, in fact, a famous friend, Robert Skotak of the Skotak Brothers special effects team, who won several Oscars, he and I decided we needed to do something to commemorate. It was like a year later, I think, or maybe it was even 6 months later. I can't remember. But we went to a park in North Hollywood that didn't have anybody in it but us, and we started lighting candles. And all of a sudden, this person would come up, that person would come up, homeless people from the park would come up, people would stop their cars And it grew and it grew and it grew until fire trucks were joining us and parking on either corner. Cops were coming, not to break it up, but to get out of their cars and join in. And it was just a memory of all the people who had died. And everybody shouting USA and singing, and it just became this huge thing. CNN came, the local channels came, and it became this national thing. And my friend and I started it. And I wrote about it in Chicken Soup for the Soul of America. And, you know, it was accepted right away. And I got a Firefighter's Award for writing it, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just amazing how it trickled and trickled. And then people from a church came with candles. And then people at the restaurant across the street just got out of the restaurant and came. You know, it just grew and grew and grew and grew. So that was neat.
Well, you know, one other thing I learned from that, that is quite an experience, Lynn.
Mm-hmm, it was. Yep.
I mean, as you describe, you know, you could just picture, so it's nothing happened quite the way you expected, especially when, you know, with the police and the fire department. Just, that is a quite
well, what
a
was wonderful
moment.
Is nobody cared what your politics were. We were Americans,
yeah.
And somebody
yeah.
had attacked America. So it's like in all the science fiction novels, when some alien race attacks Earth, then suddenly you aren't nations, you are humans, you are people, you are Earthers. And this was amazing because we nobody cared, you know, what kind of person you were or what your wealth in the world was or what your politics were at all. We were all Americans and we were all, you know, chanting and USA, USA. And so I wish we could have that again and not be as divided as we are, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want a big disaster that may, in order to
no,
make it
no.
happen. I'm just saying.
No.
Yeah.
Also, in your bio and on your website, and by the way, Lynn's website is lynnbarker.net. The newest book that she co-wrote with longtime friend D.C. Fontana, Futurist Rex, is available on Amazon. I think you can get it online from Barnes & Noble and different places. If you don't know where to get it, yes, everywhere. But if you don't know where to get it, ask me. I will be sharing information on a website and how to get her book on all of my social media, not only Madame Perry Salon, but also on my personal social media. So that way I'll make sure that everybody knows where and how to get it if you haven't got it already. Have you got it already, Peter?
I think he went away.
Sorry about that. Having problems.
Oh, no. I think it's not about the prize.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Jen, I forgot to say, and that is until June 9th, it is the e-book is for sale for 99 cents in honor of Dorothy for Memorial Day. So get on there now. It's usually $5, but the e-book, but it's 99 cents. So, heck, you know, you can't lose. And also the paperback is there and a wonderful audiobook recorded by a wonderful artist named Stacy Lind, L-I-N-D. She is a beautiful reader, and she had to do like 6 different kinds of British accents. The posh and the you know, the poor gal and the poor boy and just every British accent you'd ever imagine, and a couple of Scottish ones and an Irish one, and she did a great job. So if you like audiobooks, there you go. There's that too.
All right. Yeah, audiobooks are great, especially people who drive for work or just have to drive, period.
And sometimes people listen to them while they work because they do something with their hands and they're just sitting there, you know, they're working. But that's a good thing, too. Or while you're running, put the iPods in your ear or whatever and go running with it. But I wanted to mention a fan page we have on Futurist Rex is the name on Facebook. And I put up, you know, information on what I'm doing and then old pictures of Dorothy and I that nobody has seen. And it's just a place to catch up with it and get the latest on the book. So that's just at Futurist Rex. It's a fan page on Facebook. And also
okay.
I'm a Goodreads author. Get me on Goodreads. I'm a Goodreads author, too.
Oh, yes, Goodreads. Hey, Lynn Barker, I mean, as like I said, to paraphrase my producer, Megan Whitlock, she's Lynn freaking Barker. And she doesn't have enough – doesn't have enough followers on Goodreads. So, Peter, you get over to Goodreads and follow Lynn Barker and tell all your friends. And I will,
and
too.
Go to the fan page and give us some more followers. We need more followers.
And the fan page, too. And I have just posted a couple of today some things from the fan page for Futurist Rex that's on Facebook. I posted it on my pages, so you can just link that from there. And you're welcome, Lynn. After all you've done for us for most of our lives, it's the least I could do.
No, I just try to my artistic thing, whatever it is. I'm, you know.
This,
oh, my kitty! My kitty is kneading the pillow again. My kitty is acting up.
Okay. When you're in Madame Perry's salon, Michonne and everyone else can do whatever feels right.
Okay. Say so. She won't go to the bathroom. She doesn't do that unless it's in her box.
Oh,
so.
I know she won't take that too literally.
No, she's not going to do just anything.
I'd like to read, if I could. Now, my best friend Patty, when I was growing up, we remember when Star Trek first started. And our shows were Star Trek and Man from U.N.C.L.E. And
I loved Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Right.
And Napoleon Solo. I remember those.
And Napoleon Solo. Oh, yes. I've got a vinyl album of Robert Vaughn reading.
Oh.
I think he's reading King Arthur story.
Really? I got to find that.
I'll have to dig out and find it. Yes, and I've still got a handbook from U.N.C.L.E. And did I got
I have
it some
a picture, I think. But yeah, so that was a long time ago.
But our favorites were, yeah, we loved the public. And did you like David McCallum on NCIS?
Yes, bringing him back was nice to see him again. Different look, not the cute little blonde-haired, soup bowl cut, you know, Ilya Kuryakin. But he's a good actor, and it was fun to see him,
Well, and, of course, we loved everybody on Star Trek. And Walter Koenig, who played Ensign Chekhov, one of our favorites.
Yeah.
He wrote a lovely blurb, a review. Can I read it, or did you want to?
Oh, sure. It's kind of a flip. It's funny. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, go ahead. No, you read it. He gave us a good review. We're trying to get George Takei now, but he's going to conventions all the time. You can't find him.
That guy, yes. He's like some teen idol now. He's everywhere. I know a friend that was in one of his shows, and it's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Star Trek's Chekhov, Walter Koenig reviews Futurist Rex by D.C. Fontana and Lynn Barker. And he says, that's my Casey Kasem, and he writes, past worlds and future worlds clash and revealed is a world of enchantment. King Arthur, the once and future king, returns, as does Modred, Arthur's great nemesis. Aliena, the songsayer, stands beside Arthur to do battle against grand musician, help me there, Karayan?
Magician, yeah. Karayan, it's Karayan, yes.
Karayan. Oh, magician. Yeah, I know how to say magician. But Mad Empress. Our relationships are formed, people triumph, and people die as the story rushes to a satisfying conclusion. I read it in a day and a half, and he wrote that in March. So, folks.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, we're really grateful. Yeah, we're so sadly, Walt lost his wife Judy at the end of last year, and that's his long time. And who was on several Star Trek movies, as she was an actress as well. And he lost her, so to have him agree, you know, this soon to be doing that favor for us to read the book was really, yeah, I was really grateful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Judy Leavitt, that was her
Leavitt,
name.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I see, too, again, from your website, it says Lynn was an MPAA accredited Hollywood entertainment journalist for several websites, writing experience also. also includes show scripts for Disney, Imagineering, and Universal Theme Park Auctions, script doctor, and screenplay consultant. Do you still do consultations, or can people still hire you to doctor
well,
a script?
Well, not right now, because I'm trying to write the sequel. I do it on and off, and I used to have a website, but it's now obsolete. I'd have to create another one as the story consultant or screenplay doctor. I may have to start writing it again, you know, before. But no, I have to concentrate on this sequel right now because I'm busy talking to people like you and writing ads and doing things to sell the first book. So not right now I'm not doing it, but I might in future start it up again.
Okay. All right. So if people can watch when the next book is finished, then they can hire you or try to hire you. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. but people can write me if they want to ask me a question about what's coming up, and I won't tell them everything, but or make a comment about the book or whatever. You can write me at futurusdc@gmail.com. FUTURUSDC, for Dorothy's name, at gmail.com.
All right. FuturusDC@gmail. And it is legit email address, folks, because
it's real.
It works
yeah,
for me.
I'll get
yeah.
it. I might not look at it every day, but I will get to you.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I also want to say, well, I've got time. I want to thank my friend and fellow podcaster, Sherry Rabinowitz, for introducing
Yay,
me to
Sherry.
You and making this connection. And Sherry is, she's quite a talented woman. She's a writer as well and a playwright, but she's a podcaster, and I just adore her. She's my West Coast sister. And
yeah, chatting
so
with
much,
Sherry. Chatting with Sherry is her SHERRI is her show.
Yes, Chatting with Sherry, and thank you, Sherry. I texted her that I was going to give her a shout out and thank you, love. So. Be sure to listen to Chatting with Sherry. And sometimes she has plays, audio plays that she writes and cast. And people, they're very, very good. Especially if you like those old kind of murder mysteries like the old British things, like the Cecil Beaton or Miss Fisher. Yeah. That's great. So you're working on a sequel.
At this point, I'm fleshing out the outline. I haven't started writing the actual book. I'm trying to get the kinks out of the outline so, you know, everything is answered and nothing is illogical. And that's the worst part of writing, I think, is getting – a lot of people don't use an outline. They just, you know, have a character and the characters start doing things and they write a book. That's not me. Dot wasn't Dorothy either. You plan it out in some way. And then, of course, characters are going to take off and do whatever they want to, and you'll have a scene that you didn't even plan on. Every writer knows that. But I like to you know, plan it out and say, uh-oh, why would he have done that if this happened? Then you have to go back and fix it. So I'm trying to fix it in advance before I get going on it. So I am working on it. It's just going to take me a while.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we can't wait, and we're so excited. And I just can't – I would just love to see this on the screen because now people have the ability to create what Bud Lewis had an idea for, and then you share with DC and you and the things that you have created and put together. Now people could make it real.
Yeah, it just was – Yeah, it was. It would have to be a guy in a suit or something animated like a cartoon animation back in that day, and that wouldn't work for a character that is in your face talking to you.
Yeah.
But by the way, if you go to the Futurist Rex fan page on Facebook, I've posted a lot of Bud's drawings, original drawings that he was going to use in the graphic novel of the story, up on that. And you can, if you're a graphic novel fan, you can look at those. Now, some of them do not look like the characters ended up looking like. Because we, you know, they evolved. But some of them do. And so... you know, and of course you're going to have your own ideas in your head of who and what everybody looks like when you read it. But it's fun to see Bud's really excellent drawings, and they're posted. You just have to scroll down on the page to see all the posts.
And let me insert this. If you have to scroll down a good ways to get to it, believe me, the trip, folks, is delightful. Every there are just some beautiful pictures. And so, yeah, it is a delightful trip there. Oh, and a cute picture of Walter Koenig. So,
oh, you're looking at it.
Yes.
We used a song. I'm gonna give my friend some credit. We used a song that Aliena, the songsayer, sings called "A Star to Steer By." That the lyric, it was written by Karen Wilson, who is also a writer, and did a lot of filking, especially back in the day when I met her that way. And she let us use her lyrics for Aliena, and I credit her at the end of the book. So I wanted to mention Karen Wilson.
Oh, well, lovely. Karen Wilson. Okay, good. And you were a performer. You're a musician. You said you play guitar, you sing, and you did it professionally.
Well, I've been paid. Oh boy, how do we say that? I guess it's professionally if you've ever been paid. So I guess. But
well,
Dorothy and I used to sing folk songs at conventions, and we would lampoon a show that we thought was a Dorothy show. We would lampoon it, or we would praise it, and we'd do a real praising song to things we liked. Mm. And we sang together and played. But I started singing folk in the folk revival, which was the 60s folk revival that happened. That, you know, you'd hear songs on the radio that were folk songs by, you know, oh, my God, the Kingston Trio, Peter, Paul, and Mary, the Chad Mitchell Trio. I can go on and on. But these were, when I was young, I started, that's how I started playing guitar. And I was with a trio, three girls in high school we would sing. And then when I got to college, I graduated to singing with me and two guys. So we became the Peter, Paul, and Mary of Albuquerque, New Mexico. But, I put my guitar aside for a while, and then finally I did a little bit more filking, and then Dorothy and I kind of stopped doing that. But when I moved back to New Mexico 9 years ago I came from New Mexico, and I moved back here in 2014, and I found the Albuquerque Folk Festival and met those people, and now I'm a part of that. So I'm singing old folk again. And I've written a few songs that I never tried to publish or anything, but I mainly just do it for fun. And now I'm in – the Folk Festival is going to be October 7th here during our Balloon Fiesta. It's the same weekend as our big Albuquerque Balloon Fiesta. So we have a big folk festival that we do, so all day, and it's a lot of fun. So I'll be singing and playing in that.
Yeah, that sounds great. And professional, people ask me, you know, when I was with, because most of my band did a lot of, you know, club, but we did some corporate work too. So when people say, you're a singer, you got a band, I've never heard of you. And I would just go, well, it doesn't really matter because the IRS has. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can get away with a little bit, but a certain amount, after a certain amount, they're after you. Yeah. For sure. But, no, we never made a record, or but somebody approached us at one time when I was in college, but we never did that. But, you know, just for fun, I always have done it. I've always, since I was quite young, like, my gosh, 12 or something, I've liked to sing and play guitar. Not that I sing better than I play guitar, that's for sure.
Well, I will, maybe when I get out that way again, maybe we can meet, and I will bring my percussion. I'll bring my shaker egg, and I can show you what I can do with that, you know.
Ooh, awesome. I can play the tambourine pretty well.
All right. I've never gotten a shaker egg solo, but I always, you know, keep thinking one day those guys are gonna want to go home with a paycheck.
Yes, sir. Yes. For sure.
All right. Liv Barker, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and your stories and everything you've given to this world. You and your friend D.C. Fontana have made...
Make me sound like No, I haven't given that much. I've just tried to do what I have to do. If you're a writer, you got to write, so...
And I did watch, I can't remember the name now, Dead Woman's Shoes.
Oh, that's
my,
Helen Mirren, man, that's my zone. And as an entertainment journalist, I interviewed Helen a couple of times. And, you know, we did a little old home week because we met on set of that zone. And this is before she was Dame Helen. She was just starting her movie career in television back that in those days. But, yeah, I've got a wonderful autographed picture of her in my zone that I treasure. If there's a fire, that's one of the first things I'm running out of the house with, besides little Michonne.
Michonne, oh, yes. And Michonne, you have been such a precious guest tonight. You've just been so sweet. I hope you feel comfortable. I hope my pillow's there. I hope the pillow was comfortable for you, Lynn Barker, but I also hope it was comfortable.
Oh, I love this place. I mean, it's really like being inside a genie bottle. It's lovely.
Oh, good, good. Well, we aim to please. And Michonne, I hope that the need that pillow was sufficient.
Well, I'm sorry the stuffing is sticking out in one corner, so we'll have to. Yeah, I've got to clip her claws because when she needs, you can be maimed.
Well, look at it this way: when the stuffing gets thrown out the window, and then you can see what NASA says about it. Okay, maybe James Webb. Telescope. We'll have some kind of story about it. So anyway, thanks, folks. I have people messaging me in. Pat from Tennessee says, I love you. I think you're wonderful. And thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And
thank you,
Pat. And also Matt in Alabama said the same thing. He says, I have listened to the entire show. This is fantastic. Thank you so much. I will get the book tonight. So yay.
Dorothy thinks you from floating around in the stars where she is now.
Somewhere out there.
No woman has gone before. No, she's out there. And so she thanks you, too.
And thanks to Megan Whitlock, my producer, and to our friend, our favorite Polish animator, Peter G. And
thanks, Peter, so much.
And thanks for everything. This is Madam Perry and Lynn Barker and Michonne saying, you folks are pretty cool, so be good to each other, be good to yourselves, and remember my philosophy, everybody's got the swing. Love you. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Luda.